From the Journal of Energy and Natural Resources Law podcast series, I am Don Smith, Editor-in-Chief of the Journal. Today we are joined by Matthias Lang, a partner in the German-based Bird and Bird's Dusseldorf office. He is a member of the firm's International Energy and Utilities Sector Group and an expert in European energy generation and security issues. With extensive experience in advising clients on all aspects of the German Energiewende and the energy transition more generally, Dr. Lang advises on cross-border energy issues, including both conventional and renewable energy generation, oil and gas, planning and permit procedures for power generation, extra high voltage lines, hydrogen, gas pipelines and gas storage, as well as energy and other industrial installations. Dr. Lang is a regular contributor to a variety of legal publications and recently was featured on a story broadcast by the U.S.-based National Public Radio. He has a Ph.D. in environmental and corporate law from Humboldt University in Berlin. Recently, Dr. Lang and I sat down to discuss the topic of European energy security as the European Union and all European nations face the coming winter months. Dr. Lang, thank you for joining us today. I'd like to begin with a bit of historical background of how Germany became so dependent on Russian oil and gas.
It's a long story, and it's a story with some twists and turns. I think the history started actually even before I was born in the 1950s, with discussions about large pipeline projects with what was then the Soviet Union. And I think the beginning of 59, 62, there were some exports of German steel pipelines to the Soviet Union. But in 1962, there was a sort of, I think, the first embargo on pipelines. And that embargo was lifted again in 66. 68, there was a gas pipeline project actually from neutral Austria, the Transgas pipeline project, which basically was a trade pipelines for gas. I think that set a precedent so that in 1970, there was a triangular gas deal, again, with the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union provides gas to Ruhrgas for 20 years. German gas steel pipeline companies supply the pipelines. The banks pre-finance the pipelines, and then the gas supply was used to pay for the loans that pay for the actual pipes. So that's how it sort of really got off. I think in 1970 was the first sort of bigger project. And then there was several projects after that. And all over time, there were always sort of discussions, yes, no, the US was particularly against it at some time. We had Cuba, we had the oil crisis. The oil crisis 74 actually sort of again helped oil and gas from Russia, because Germany was looking for a diversification of energy supply from OPEC countries. So we had all this going back and forth. 82, we had a pipeline conflict. We had this discussion, containment of the Soviet Union on the other hand. On the one hand, and on the other side, there were cooperation with the Soviet Union, and there was a German approach, change through trade, that was used. So we tried that sort of several times again. Then we had sanctions, 82, Reagan. So all this sort of went back and forth all the time. Over time, Germany always tried to diversify its energy supply. Gas from Russia was an important part of it, and it was cheap compared to the others, and provided an alternative to getting gas from other countries. Obviously, getting gas from the Middle East was pricey. Getting gas from the US, I mean, some of that, the fracking in the US is a fairly recent development. So we had all these developments over time, and the bottom line was that was the cheapest way of getting gas into Germany. And then sort of towards the, I suppose, 2000, gas started to have an additional appeal as being a lower carbon, lower CO2 emitter compared to coal. I mean, Germany had traditionally had coal, hard coal, and in particular lignite. And then when the energy transition started to grow, we were looking for alternatives for coal in particular, for the lignite. And gas seemed to be the cleanest and cheapest option at the time. So part of the Energiewende was replacing other sources, primary energy sources, by gas. In Germany, we had the particular part on top of it that the debate about nuclear power after Fukushima intensified, and Germany decided to also phase out nuclear power. We had quite a substantial amount of the German electricity supply came from nuclear power. So if you want to replace nuclear power, hard coal, and lignite, well, renewable energy, of course, was one of the key elements of the Energiewende, replacing, going away from fossil fuels, but also from nuclear. But you still need, in times when you do not have sufficient renewable energy at night, in the morning, in the winter when there's no wind blowing, you need other sources of energy supply. And every time gas turned out to be a comparatively low CO2 and comparatively cheap option. So that basically led to Germany, I think in 2021, having a bit more than 50% of its gas supply, a gas need being provided from Russia. On top, there are limits to how much gas Norway can supply, and the Netherlands were also starting to phase out their gas supply because of problems in the gas fields with earthquakes that would be triggered by extracting the gas. Finally, Germany never really warmed up to the idea of fracking, even though we could technically do that in Germany. We were hesitant to use fracking to get our own gas, and actually also gas from neighboring countries. So again, that all led to Russian gas, and Russia had over many years been a safe supplier of gas. And we had, all through the Cold War, when all these things were happening, Russia had always supplied the gas. So the risk of Russia then at some stage stopping to do that was considered to be pretty low. And since also the people in favor of the moving towards renewable energy, they needed an alternative supply to get out of nuclear, they said, okay, well, then we rather take Russian gas than nuclear. So I think that sort of a combination of various aspects that in Germany in particular meant having pipeline gas from Russia, which that led to Germany becoming so dependent on, so reliant on Russian gas and oil. Of course, there's also an oil pipeline from Russia, so that was part of the original pipeline projects already. So that, I think, is the historical background.
Thank you for that really excellent historical view of where Germany, how Germany got to today. Speaking of today, what steps has Germany in particular, in Europe more broadly, taken to deal with the situation of the cutoff of Russian gas?
An incredible number of steps has been taken already and are being taken. And something new happens basically every day. So I think what we are doing is trying to change everything. really. There was a fairly clear path of the energy transition, basically shutting down, having a staggered shutdown of the nuclear plants, having a staggered shutdown of the hard coal plants and also the lignite plants, and then at the same time building up renewable energy. Now, at some stage, the laws of physics and the laws of markets overrule the laws of politics, because that nice story of continuing sort of on the trajectory of the normal energy, German energy transition and also European energy transition, it became clear that that won't work anymore. And now, basically, we are seeing state intervention at every step. I mean, changing everything and making sure that somehow we get the physical needs fulfilled. It really is a very, very long list of steps that have been taken. If I start at the European level, for that matter, Europe also had this big energy transition project. Clean energy in Europe was a big project, and the member states' ability to move freely and change their energy policy is limited, because there are various instruments at the European level, not the least of which being the European state aid rules, that provide a pretty strong framework in which the member states can act. So Germany by itself cannot decide, okay, I'm going to support this industry, that industry, I'm going to pay these guys and I'm not going to pay the others. All of that sort of has to go through the European policy check, and not only policy, there's usually hardcore European laws, state aid rules or other European electricity market regulation that need to be complied with. So the German government and also the other European governments are in constant communication with the EU, and the EU is moving. At the same time, of course, Germany has looked at all the different pieces of the energy supply puzzle. One, for example, is gas storage. Germany has quite a sizable gas storage capacity which we had seen last year that the gas storage in Germany was not used as much as it used to be. And when Russia invaded Ukraine, it became clear that there was a plan behind it. So Germany decided, okay, let's see if we can get our gas storage filled up, and started a big program basically for having a central entity buy gas at the market to see that we can get our gas storage filled up before the beginning of winter. If I recall correctly, there was a 15 billion euro program to actually just buy gas and put it into storage. That was credit facilities and everything made available. And the entity that sort of is in charge of it then started buying. We then started to look for alternatives to Russian pipeline gas. Obviously, one alternative is LNG. And Germany does not have its own, not a single LNG terminal at the moment. So all of the LNG for the German market has to come through other LNG terminals. Of course, that's not much of a problem if everything goes smoothly, because if you, you know, go through Rotterdam or other ports, it's not very far. Yeah, you clear the LNG in Rotterdam and you pipe it, pump it through a pipeline to Germany. But Germany thought, well, maybe having a couple of LNG terminals wouldn't be a bad idea after all. I mean, that's something that had been discussed for a long time. And all of the programs in the past have been sort of put on ice again, because it was more expensive to get the LNG into Germany than getting Russian gas. So we needed to change a couple of laws to actually build them in record time. When you think about it, I think we've just had, for the first LNG terminal, we now have a permit to build the pipeline, which took less than 6 months to permit. So Anyone who's familiar with infrastructure permitting knows that this is an incredibly short time where you basically shorten everything. And whether that is even lawful, probably the courts will look into later. But the plan is to have the first LNG terminal operational around Christmas, which with the invasion at the beginning of 22 and then having a new terminal, LNG terminal available, floating with floating supply is a record. So we need to change a couple of laws to do that, and that is working. Another example is reduction of energy consumption. The government is encouraging people to reduce energy consumption because all the energy that you don't consume, you don't have to look for alternative sources for. There are also some other sort of structural measures. For example, Gazprom Germania, a Russian-owned entity, played a really important role in the German gas supply system. That company was fairly early on put under the control of the German Federal Network Agency to make sure that that entity actually works in the interest of having gas supply. That entity was originally only sort of put into a trustee situation, so it wasn't nationalized in the first step, but only sort of controlled by now by the Federal Network Agency. Now, as things are looking at the moment, that company will ultimately also be nationalized, but that's one thing. Or the biggest German gas importer, Uniper, obviously had a major problem because they have the long-term gas supply agreements with Gazprom. And they had sold the gas that they were expecting to get at fixed prices again on a long-term basis to municipal gas companies and other gas consumers. And obviously we had a total disbalance of the sales price that Uniper has and the non-supply of the long-term gas agreements, and they had to buy at market price, losing enormous amounts of money. And the government stepped in first with financing for Uniper to make sure that the gas market doesn't collapse, because if the biggest importer of gas collapses, someone else has to come up with the gas and has to organize it. So that company was first stabilized with credit facilities, and it now has just been decided that the government of Germany is taking over almost 99% of the company. And we're likely to see further things like that. What else do we do? The changes in the energy mix that we have. You know, we had this plan that mentioned energy transition, sort of phasing out nuclear, phasing out hard coal, phasing out lignite, basically replacing quite a bit of that with gas. That was something that the German politicians, the German coalition government, had quite some problems with, because we have a coalition government which is Social Democrats, Green Party, and Liberal Democrats. Now, the Green Party's original rise was strongly connected with being anti-nuclear. And sort of the second major item on the list of the Green Party was, of course, CO2 reduction, which is closing down lignite and hard coal power plants, and which has very much been supported also by the Social Democratic Party, as it had actually been supported by the Christian Democrats beforehand. Now, physically, it doesn't work. With the plan, things being as they are at the moment, you cannot continue to shut down the conventional power plants and probably also nuclear if you don't have gas and gas power plants to do that. That took quite a long time sort of to really find its way into the political reality. First of all, I think in particular the Green Party was first of all a get out of nuclear, then a reduce CO2 party. So I think they first sort of warmed up to the idea of maybe not doing the coal exit now, keeping sort of reactivating coal-fired power plants that had been sent into reserve. And it now also looks like the nuclear plants. We have three nuclear plants running that were meant to go, meant to be switched off at the end of this year. Let's see, they will probably also not be switched off, but that is currently being decided. So again, I think the key element here is change the electricity mix, or rather not having the forced closures of coal power plants and the nuclear plants, I think is another big part. I think one further element that I think I would like to mention is there are other particular specific acts that provide money to certain energy intensive industries or companies that are particularly hard hit by the increase in the electricity prices. There are Energy Security Act that will be used to provide a basis probably to provide aid to gas importers who, like Uniper, sort of had long-term agreements with Gazprom or had agreements with Gazprom to buy gas cheaply. They are now not supplied anymore, and to help them finance the losses. So there are different sort of little statutes or statutory elements being introduced basically everywhere in the legal system to try to offset some of the losses for the company, so it's commercially viable for them to get through the winter, and also make changes so that physically the power is either produced or can be imported using other means. And commercially, the government is trying to help with contracts that make sure that enough primary energy comes into the country. So I think that probably is an overview of steps that Germany has taken and Europe has taken place to prepare for the coming winter is probably what I can say now. Of course, there's a lot more. Clear element is far more state intervention in the electricity supply. So we really see that while we had a phase of market forces, we thought that mobilizing market forces to have efficient and secure energy supply, something that's very much on the back burner at the moment. It's state intervention, the state sort of making it possible, financing it, providing the money and the means to get the power to get us through coming winter.
Bearing in mind these various steps that you've outlined for us, what is your assessment at this point? And we're talking in late September. What is your assessment of what the energy situation will look like over the winter? And in particular, one related question I have is, will the energy situation lead to a recession in Germany and in Europe?
Well, since I'm just a lawyer, maybe not the right person to say whether we're going to have a recession or not. But I think what is clear is that the enormous increase in electricity prices are going to have an adverse effect on the economic development, both of the country and individual households, because these increases in electricity and power prices, gas prices, are enormous. And they are going to hit not only the households, but many industry players. And as you know, Germany still has a strong industrial base. Many of them need power. And the government can try to assist, but still the gas prices in the world market have gone up. We have not placed a lot of emphasis in the past of being able to have the power locally from Germany, so we have to buy at world market prices. And since these prices are up, that is going to be a challenge. Now, Germany is, I suppose, a reasonably wealthy country that to some degree can just pay for whatever the energy market price is. But still, the rest of the world will also have higher prices. And I think it's going to be a pretty tough winter. And many people don't yet realize how expensive it's going to be. So let's see. We've seen some changes one way or the other. And the markets are what they are. And let's see how the economies in the different countries will be able to cope with these challenges.
Dr. Lang, setting aside for a moment this coming winter, what does the future look like for energy security in Europe? Say, if you could fast forward to next summer and next autumn and winter, will there be any reliance on Russia at that point, or will still some gas be needed from Russia?
Well, I don't know. The big question is how is the war in Ukraine going to develop? I mean, we can think through all sorts of scenarios, but one thing I think that is clear is that the sort of belief that we've held for 40, 50 years that Russia is a reliable supplier of energy for Germany or for Europe, that is gone. And it will take a very, very long time until people will be willing to believe that it is a reasonably reliable way to get your energy is to get it by from Russia. So that, I think, is at least on the German and European front, something that will determine how energy policy is going to go forward. I think we will see a further push to have more renewable energy, which I think is a good thing going forward, because in the long run, it will be helpful for us. The key question is, how much bridge time do we need and what do we do in the bridge time? I think we've had the plan in 2030 to have whatever percentage of renewable energy, and Germany had pretty strong plans. I think we need to see how we make sure that we have sufficient energy, and not only Germany, and other countries as well. I think it doesn't help the world if Germany just buys whatever it gets on the market. There are other countries as well with the same challenge. So I think that's the key part. How do we make sure that the energy transition can be accelerated on the one hand, so we have more renewable energy and ultimately less CO2, while at the same time making sure that our economies don't collapse along the way, because then it doesn't help us to be 100% renewable in 2035 if we don't make it to 2035. So I think that's the part, and I think we will probably have to swallow some bitter pills until then. And some of the CO2 reduction measures that we would have liked to see, we will not, because we will just keep on burning coal. And probably my personal guess is that we will also see to what extent we can use nuclear energy to just make sure that we can bridge that gap. And I don't see the issue being resolved in 2023. I think this is a longer term plan, and we need to come up with a really sound and reasonable plan how physically the energy transition is going to work. And I think one thing that is coming back now to bite us is that we had previously hoped that, well, we just increase renewable energy and somehow the engineers fix the physical gap in between how we get from the existing energy supply system to the future renewable energy supply system, maybe by getting hydrogen in, by getting battery in. Somehow someone will solve the storage problem. And we had hoped that maybe Russian gas will help us buy time to reduce CO2 until the engineers and inventors figure out a way to sort of store energy that we have from renewable energy. I think that's something where we really need to work on, where the people will also have to understand that the laws of physics you can't change. No matter how much you want to, if you want the power, there are certain things you need to do. So in 2023, summer of 2023, hopefully will be a sunny summer again, where we won't need much power, because in Germany, the P peak consumption is not in summer, like in the US. Peak consumption is in winter because we don't use so much air conditioning. But summer 2023, we will have seen how we have made it through the winter 2022-2023. We will see what the war will look like in Ukraine, and how what we have come up with on the physical side and what the engineers have done. But reliance on Russia at that point, well, hopefully Russia comes to its senses, in my view, at some stage, so that people will be able to look at things in a sort of cleaner way, not in a war scenario. But the future looks, what does the future look like in terms of energy security for Europe in 2023? I think probably not much better than it does now, but hopefully we will be on the right track on resolving this by whatever, 2030, hopefully a bit before that.
Dr. Lang, thank you very much for your really revealing observations about where Europe is, and Germany in particular, as we head into these next few months of 2022 and we begin 2023. So thank you very much again.
It's been my great pleasure. Thank you so much.